hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on the wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and fought and died in peace. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought and died key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought and died key. If you don't love it.
Oh, we're having some trouble with our music this evening. This is Paul Fong.
Leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run it down my country, man, you walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, that's more news and views for our people, and lots of outrages today. Here's a story from The Blaze. Fired teacher says hackers posted racist comment on her Facebook account. And we have an example of that right here in Canada with Professor Anthony Hall at the University of Lethbridge. He has basically, he's been put on long-term leave without pay, with pay, because B'nai B'rith, the professional censorship group and Jewish lobby group, complained bitterly a little over a year ago that there were some anti-Jewish postings on his Facebook. Well, there were, but he didn't put them there, and later they tracked it down to who did it. Nonetheless, the university went into a complete panic, filed complaints with the Alberta Human Rights Commission, and suspended the professor without pay. Well, they later found out, as he was tenured, they couldn't do that. So he's getting full pay, but he's not allowed even on campus as the Human Rights Tribunal process works its slow way. Anyway, that's a Canadian story. Here's the Mississippi story. Officials at a Mississippi school fired a teacher over a rant posted on her Facebook about black people going back to Africa, but she claims that hackers did it. If blacks in this country are so offended, no one is forcing them to stay here, was the message posted on Cammie Roan's Facebook page. Why don't they pick up and move back to Africa, where they will have to work for a living? I'm sure our government will pay for it. We pay for everything else. Well, I don't know how that's a rant. Actually, not a bad thought. Yeah. In a later post, Roan, who was a teacher at Batesville Intermediate School in Batesville, denied authoring the offensive message. "Please do not accept any friend requests for me. I think I've been hacked," she wrote. "I keep getting messages from racist posts, but when I go to my page, I can't see it. Somebody screenshot it and sent it to me. If anyone knows me, I post about cows, recipes, and home improvements stuff, not about race. Please know that I've not posted or made any kind of racist comments. Any questions, feel free to call me." Well, okay, that's her story, and you know, one has to kind of believe that you know, it must be true. Well, what I find sad is the school board would react like that. You know, there is freedom of speech is a distinctly rare commodity. And this was sent to me by Dr. James Sanchez in Seattle, and this is his comment. "Here's a good reason not to have a Facebook account. The good reason? Because you're an 8-year-old boasting to other third graders." Not everybody would necessarily agree with that assessment, but as the Marxist liberal left become increasingly empowered by political correctness, they become more and more insidious in their attacks. With the support of the majority of mainstream media, we can expect more of these underhanded tactics against individuals who fall foul of the Marxist liberal left. So if you're working, especially in the public sector, you might want to reconsider being on Facebook or other social media where you can be hacked. If you hold opposite views, especially Christians, should be especially careful as they will become increasingly targeted. And you know, I think that's an interesting a piece of advice. I won't say I totally agree with it. I think a lot of this depends on your circumstances, but definitely due process is a rare commodity these days. Here's a very interesting note from Michael Hoffman III. Now, he's the author of so many good books on revisionist history and related topics, and this is about an annual event called I just have to make sure I've got this straight. It's Freedom to Read Week. This is actually Banned Books Week, but it's similar. And he asks, can it get any more surreal than this? Banned revisionist history books that are banned by Banned Books Week. This is to Orrin Teicher, CEO of the American Booksellers Association in White Plains, New York. "Are you aware that Banned Books Week, which your American Booksellers Association sponsors, has banned all mention of Amazon's ban on World War II revisionist books, especially books by Germar Rudolph and others? Mr. Rudolph's many volumes, including a landmark work of erudite historiography, Lectures on the Holocaust, were banned for sale by Amazon earlier this year. What few reports of Amazon's bans that have made it into the mainstream news have falsely reported that just 3 books were banned." And he goes on to say, banned books that are banned by Banned Books Week. Can it get any more surreal? Do you intend to do anything about this farce?" And this is signed by Michael Hoffman, independent history and research publisher of Revisionist History. And you can get his frequent postings, which he calls the Hoffman Wire, and you can go to his website at www.revisionisthistory.org. So that's revisionisthistory.org. And he constantly publishes really good material. And I think he's asked a very, very important question here. And you know, the levels of hypocrisy of so much of the establishment in the United States and Canada is breathtaking. You know, oh, they're against banned books, but they won't mention the banning by Amazon of a whole slew of revisionist books earlier this year. It's very important that people like Hoffman and you and me call these people on their hypocrisy. You know, not just enough to complain, yes, it's a bad thing. Of course it's a bad thing. But we've got to do something about it. And, you know, protests are where it begins. Anyway, I want to thank Rachel for sending this my way. It's actually put up by Conrad Schreiber. You might be a liberal if you want to save Darfur, but aren't willing to do anything more than slap a bumper sticker on your car. If you want to ban guns, except for those carried by your kids' bodyguards, like Rosie O'Donnell. If you are against school vouchers for public school students, but send your own kids to a private school. Yeah. Like Ted Kennedy, well, years ago. If you support alternative energy, but don't want windmills to spoil the view from your own backyard. Well, that's quite true, and I'll go a bit further than that. Windmills are not just an eyesore, but they are a huge killer of wildlife, particularly birds. So I would... anyway, you might be a liberal if you think that consenting adults can engage freely in every activity except capitalism. If you want to outlaw cigarettes but legalize marijuana. I'll have an item like that in just a few minutes. If you have no problem with Hollywood movie stars flying around in private jets to give speeches on the evils of global warming. If deep down you believe 3,000 American civilians deserve to die on 9/11. If you think Israel is a criminal state, but Hamas, no. If you support killing the unborn innocent, but oppose killing the condemned, murderers. If you think marriage is obsolete, except for homosexuals. If you uphold a woman's right to choose, unless a woman chooses adoption, chooses to be a stay-at-home mom, chooses to homeschool, or chooses to start a business. If you believe that nativity scenes should be banned from public view, but that anyone objecting to pornography only needs to look the other way. And if you value tolerance, except for opinions you dislike. I think, except for the one on Israel, that... pretty neatly characterizes a good many so-called liberals. Well, here's something I came across. The whole thing is replete with laughs and things to outrage you. Toronto's Indigenous consultant resigns, files human rights complaint. Now, just in case you're not up on the latest political correctees, Indigenous refers to Indians. Okay. Not from India, the other types. The Native Indians. anyway. This is... quite the story. Toronto's Indigenous Affairs consultant, has left her post at City Hall and filed a complaint with the Ontario Human Rights Tribunal, alleging she was unfairly denied the right to engage in the Indigenous practice of smudging while at work. No, not smooching, smudging. I mean, well, what do you have to do at work, you know? Anyway, consultant Lindsay Kretschmer was hired in March to work on, for the city's bureaucracy on Indigenous issues, including plans to hire more Indigenous people. But she says she walked away from her job in July, and not a very long work time, eh? After progress on Indigenous files appeared stalled, and her superiors refused her request for what she considered an appropriate place to smudge, which involves burning sweetgrass, sage, or tobacco. Burning tobacco! No, no smoking zone! Oh my gosh. anyway. It just gets better. So the story, this is from the Globe and Mail. In an email, city saw, well, the city denies her version of the events. In an interview, Miss Kretschmer, a Wolf Clan Mohawk, pointed out that staff at other religions at City Hall have access to a special prayer and meditation room, but that no such place is set aside for smudging. See the problem with diversity? I mean, you got any number of people who you've got to, or you are urged to accommodate. If they don't accommodate you, you accommodate them. Before I get any deeper into her complaint, I'll go back and just question the why would the city need an Indigenous consultant? Well, apparently to hire more Indigenous people. What? Why should the you talk about bureaucracy that costs so much to the taxpayers? And you know, it's not necessarily one big item. It's a series of thousands of these little items. One job isn't going to break the budget, but you talk about a useless job. Well, why should there be somebody to try to recruit more Indians? Why recruit more? I mean, why not? If a job comes along, let the best person, the best of the applicants get it. Okay, well, now more deeply into the complaint. She goes on to say, this is Kretschmer, Lindsay Kretschmer. She's from the Wolf Clan of the Mohawks, she says. People of other denominations and faiths have the ability to go in there and practice their faith at any time throughout the day. And as it stands, Indigenous staff cannot. If they want to light a smudge, they cannot, Ms. Kretschmer said. And to me, that's not good enough in 2017. Well, why couldn't she, on her coffee break or lunch break, go out on the, you know, outside the building and do her smudge? She does say she was offered her manager's office in which to smudge, but found it unacceptable, as it was someone else's personal space and was not a place others could see, could use. She also said she once performed at a smudging ceremony in a city councilor's office, but would not say which one. Well, it wasn't that they wouldn't accommodate her. Oh, it wasn't good enough. It was somebody else's personal space. Well, presumably, if they set aside a room for smudging, that's smoking, okay? That's smoking. Special tobacco or sweet grass, okay. If they set aside a room for that, and several other Indians used it, well, would that not be... Well, wouldn't that be their personal space? I don't even get her objection. You know, what minorities ought to be told is, look, you can believe whatever you want on your own time. You can practice your religion, whether it means smudging or knocking your head on the ground 5 times a day and facing east or whatever your thing is. But we don't have to accommodate you. Ms. Kretschmer said the practice is exempted from Ontario's anti-smoking legislation. Colleges and universities have implemented smudging policies, and that she's done it in hotel rooms. I think she means smudging, and none. Who knows what else in hotel rooms. It just gets better and better. You'll notice, of course, here, the absolutely rank discrimination. Oh, yeah, I'll get to that in a minute. She previously worked as a program manager for the Ontario Federation of Indigenous Friendship Centres. I wonder who pays for that. And the manager of youth services for Native Child and Family Services of Toronto. And another government agency. You know, the cost of these people to the public purse, incredible. Ms. Kretschmer says she has now moved on to another non-governmental organization. According to a report on the Ontario Human Rights Commission's website, employers or other institutions are required to accommodate the need for Indigenous spiritual practices such as smudging, unless doing so requires undue hardship. So, okay, let me get this straight. If Sam wants to have a cigarette inside the workplace, let's say a school teacher, we'd like to go to a smoking room. Oh, they don't have a smoking room. Well, you go outside the front door. Oh, you can't smoke on school property. Oh, okay. So out on the public sidewalk, in the winter time to freeze and whatever. So okay, there's a no smoking room, but there's an exception for Indians that they want to smudge. Well, what's the difference? Well, there is no difference, except it's anti-white discrimination. And, I think people should push back and say, not fair. If that person gets to smoke, well, it's a religion. Yeah, no, nonsense. I like it. Doesn't that count for something, too? Well, perhaps not. Yeah, we've got to push back more. Some Indigenous people seek to smudge at, quote, unpredictable times. For example, at a time of death in a hospital or a moment of crisis during the school or work day, the Ontario Human Rights Commission report says, praising the installation of a special smudging room at the university, the Toronto offices of the Ontario Ministry of Aboriginal Affairs, where smudging accommodation needs are known to potentially exist. Organizations should take proactive steps to facilitate the practice in a dignified and timely way. So, okay, you're going to be a public institution, you better have a room dedicated to smudging for your 1.5 Aboriginal employees, or what about doing it a bit differently? Don't hire any. Yeah, you see, diversity isn't our greatest strength. Diversity is basically comes down to anti-white discrimination. So they pass a regulation or a law or whatever. No smoking in public buildings. Okay. Well, I'm not sure I agree with that. I think the anti-smoking fanatics have been on a rip for several decades. But okay, if that is the law or the regulation, no smoking on school property. In fact, when I made a recent appearance at the Peel Board of Education, or the Peel District School Board, as it's now calling itself, I discovered that zero tolerance of smoking on at least in the board building. I think you had to be so many yards away from the door if you wanted to have a puff, and you know, the usual puritanical miserable stuff. But okay, if that's the rule, then fair enough, it must be the rule for everybody. And that's not saying Native Indian can't smudge, but they have to smudge in the same places people smoke. Like, what about go home and smudge? Or smudge in your car? Or what I take from this story is that it's just more anti-white discrimination. And we are in a very difficult, politically correct times, and it's not going to get better until more people push back and protest. You know, that's really, really where it's all at. You've got to protest. You've got to fight back. Where is the outrage, asks Mike Walsh. He's a famous writer. He says, click Daily Mail or go to search and type in Holocaust. Every day a Holocaust-related story. The flimsiest excuse is all that is needed to recycle Victor's spin on World War II. Some newspaper issues carry several Holocaust stories. You know, don't forget, this is like 72 years after the end of World War II. Therefore, we can assume a minimum of 500 stories every year about the alleged murder of 2.5 million mostly Jews, which is the revised figure, not the one pushed by the Holocaust lobby, incidentally. Now, type in the word Holodomor, H-O-L-O-D-O-M-O-R, which is the name given to the deliberate starvation of 8 to 10 million Ukrainians. Stalin's figure actually was 10. In 10 years, there have been just 5 Holodomor-related stories. Trotsky's White Negroes. I emailed the following statement to over a score of periodicals. We invited a news story based on the actual wording of a recently discovered document that recorded an address made to Bolsheviks by Lev Davidovich Bronstein, otherwise known as Leon Trotsky. The Bolshevik Western-backed insurrectionist was the architect of the Red Terror, which claimed tens of millions. The undisputed but censored Soviet mega cost claimed between 70 and 100 million martyred Christians. Not one media expressed interest in covering the story. This is part of what Lev Davidovich Bronstein, or Trotsky, said. We must turn Russia into a desert populated by white Negroes. Facebook blocked me. This is this is not Paul Fromm. This is Mike Walsh writing. Facebook blocked me from sending this story to groups. They can stop one, but they cannot stop all of us. Where is the outrage? And a very, very good point he makes too. Where is the outrage? Well, it's up to people like you and me to provide that outrage. Here's a person, songs I've been playing recently. His name is Rebel Sun. Some of the lyrics are a little salty, so I'm trying to be a little careful in the songs I choose. But this one is a very very emotional little story called Mr. Confederate Man. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com.
I was just a little boy in elementary school. English and math and science class, learning the golden rule. I learned how to add and how to subtract, how to multiply and divide. I learned to...
I think because of where I am tonight, we may be having a little bit of trouble with the musical interlude. So I will do a bit of voiceover until the sound comes back. it's the internet up here in the mountains of British Columbia can sometimes be a little bit on the slow side.
About bugs, and I learned about plants, and I learned how to read and write. But my most favorite class of all was my last class of the day, when my history teacher would tell us tales of old times long gone away. I was amazed at the way she knew all the people and their names and the places and the dates. That's when I first learned about General Lee and his 13 rebel states. One day she came to school with a big brown grocery bag. She opened it up, we all helped her hold up this great big X-shaped flag. She said, "Class, now only a fool will tell you this flag is a symbol of hate. It represents the men who fought and died with pride for our Confederate states. Your assignment tonight, I want you to write, I want you to pretend that one of these brave men came back to life. Now what would you say to him?" Well, the school bell rang and I thought, as the bus carried me across town, I got out my pencil and my notebook pad, and this is what I wrote down. I wrote, "Mr. Confederate man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland. Mr. Confederate man." The next day in history class, I put my paper on the teacher's desk. Then she called me up in front of everyone because she said she liked mine the best. As I walked up to the head of the class, my teacher smiled and she nodded at me. Then I saw a tear roll down her cheek as I began to read. I read, "Mr. Confederate man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland. Mr. Confederate man." Well, I was at home reading through the news just the other day, when I ran across my old teacher's name and I saw where she had passed away. With a bittersweet smile, I looked up at my wall, a wrinkled paper in an old wood frame, where underneath pencil words almost faded away, she had marked a great big red A. Plus, "Mr. Confederate man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland. Mr. Confederate man." I wrote, "Mr. Confederate man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland. Mr. Confederate man."
And that's a great song there by Rebel Son, Mr. Confederate Man, and emphasizing something that I think is so very important, and that's pride in our heritage. Here's a another song by, actually it's not by Confederate Son, but I'm going to play it anyway. It's by Waylon Jennings, and this is The Ghost of Robert E. Lee. Waylon Jennings, one of the outlaws, Willie Nelson, and...
Through the smoke and the mud and the blood, we walked behind Robert E. Lee. 60 miles from Richmond to face the Union Army. We dug our holes and we built a wall, 'cause we knew there'd be a fight if the blue coat wearing soldiers crossed the river that night. Sure as hell at sundown came 100,000 men, and it sure did shock me, Lord, to see kin killing kin. The cannonballs were heavy, filled with iron and steel and lead, and the James River water ran bloody red. It's been 100 years, and as I look around, I see a mighty city where there once was a battleground. I thought when they surrendered, we would fight no more, but the ghost of Lee can still see us fight the Civil War.
That's The Ghost of Robert E. Lee, and that was Waylon Jennings. Yeah, play one more tune here on our short musical interlude tonight, and just want to get that, make sure we don't end up with something we don't want to hear, and exactly like that. And this is Rebel Son, Dixieland, the greatest place on earth. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on The Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Rebel Son.
I live in the land of cotton. I was born in Dixieland. Home of the loveliest ladies alive, by far the finest brand. And I love making dates in all 13 states. I love to treat myself to satisfaction guaranteed. They sure do beat everything that's anywhere else. All the ladies look and feel so fine in the Florida sunshine. And that sweet young yellow rose of Texas always shows me a good time. And we sure had some fun celebrating Bull Run with some beautiful Virginia belles. And my heart's always in Dixie and Alabama. Yes, ma'am, them women love well. Nowhere is there a land quite as grand as our Confederate States. And it's home sweet home to me, and all the women there look so great. And it's made me proud to wave my stars and bars ever since my birth. Yeah, the South is just the greatest place, the greatest place on earth. No, there's nothing like a sweet Georgia peach giving you a great big old kiss, or smooching on a sweet magnolia by the big river down in Ole Miss. And all the volunteers who volunteer in Tennessee always feel great. And in Missouri, you'll never believe what they showed me in the Show Me State. Nowhere is there a land quite as grand as our Confederate States. And it's home sweet home to me, and all the women there look so great. And it's made me proud to wave my stars and bars ever since my birth. Yeah, the South is just the greatest place, the greatest place on Arkansas, you can have a ball in the land of opportunity, or hold a sweet pretty ass land in the bluegrass out in Kentucky, or play with some pretty Louisiana boobies at Mardi Gras in New Orleans. And all the vaginas and the Carolinas are the best I've ever seen. Nowhere is there a land quite as grand as our Confederate States. And I'm proud to be unreconstructed and with women who look so great. And that's why I fly my flag up high like I've done since my birth. Cause the South is just the greatest place, the greatest place on earth. Yeah, without a doubt, the South is just the greatest place, the greatest place on earth, the greatest place on earth.
And that's Rebel Sung and the South. Dixieland, the South is the greatest place on earth. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. This is an essay by Ricardo Duchesne. He's a professor at the University of New Brunswick. He's in charge of a group called the Council of Canadians, and Council of European Canadians. There is a considerable difference, and he has written some very good critiques of multiculturalism, of course that's one of the big blights of our present society, and I'm afraid I have temporarily lost it here. You know, I haven't lost my senses, I have lost this. And I'm going to, it'll take me a second to call it up, and we'll get this presented to you, because I think it's extremely good. I'd like to thank Richard for sending it my way. And this is Professor Ricardo Duchesne of the Council of European Canadians. And my computer is extremely slow tonight, so I may be not syncing quite as well as I might prefer to. Okay. It's our fault if aliens fail to integrate. I'm sorry, this is not Professor Ricardo Shane. It's Tim Murray, who is a writer whom I know in British Columbia. The thing above, it's a picture, has entered Canada as a refugee claimant. His barbaric cultural practices will be reasonably accommodated. Does anyone know which part of the Greater Toronto Area, or the GTA, the Justin Trudeau rumored plans to set aside for the settlement of hundreds of thousands of Rohingya Muslim refugees? Are any to be seated in the Maritimes, or the Yukon, in St. John's, or in Nuvik, of ADU for more vibrancy? I ask only because Boy Wonder was in New York this week, grandstanding before an adoring audience of clapping feminists in his quest to be regarded as the Mother Teresa of North America. In this speech, he told the audience that the most important thing we can do in life is to accept and reach out to people who are different from ourselves. Oh, I see. Okay. Really? Perhaps his true vocation then would be to head SETI, that's the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligent Life. If you look at Toronto today, you might conclude that he's already found them. If they do a remake of Star Wars, they could use Toronto or Vancouver as a set for the bar scene. Now, deplorable xenophobes like me, this is Tim Murray, but he speaks for me on this, might suggest that ETs might pose a security risk or even greater concern to Canadians, that they may fail to integrate. You see, from a Canadian point of view, the problem with aliens like those depicted in fear-mongering films like The War of the Worlds or Invasion of the Body Snatchers or The Thing is that Americans fail to reach out to them. That's in Trudeau's view. In other words, they weren't Canadians. Trudeau exemplified this national mentality when asked about the cause of the Boston bombing. He said that the bomber was one of the many young people who feel left out of society, and if we only included them, it would be a different story. Now, there's no reason why these two, the Muslim, I think they were two brothers, they come from, I believe it was Chechnya. Anyway, they were Muslims from what used to be the Soviet Union. There's no reason why there's nothing about American society that kept them from whatever that word means, integrating. They got an education. They had lots of opportunities. It's just that they want to practice radical Islam. They didn't like the United States. It wasn't the United States that didn't reach out to them. But anyway, according to the gospel, diversity is our strength. Integration is a two-way street. In fact, as CBC, that's Canadian Broadcasting, reporter Margaret Evans showed in a recent interview with a German-born Muslim in Berlin, aliens don't integrate because they don't feel welcome and accepted. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that governments never have a mandate to welcome them into the country in the first place. Maybe taxpayers were never consulted before or after, just lectured about their intolerance, and that's true. We were never asked, do we want our country fundamentally changed? Do we basically want white people to be displaced? When the Immigration Act was changed in 1965, and when subsequent governments, liberal and conservative, continued to bring in large numbers of people, every year, and 85% of them are from the third world, they are effecting a demographic change in this country. We will be a white minority probably just before 2050. Now, if some people don't feel exactly welcoming, it's because we've never been involved in the conversation. We've simply been told diversity is our greatest strength. And if you happen to not particularly go along with that, well, then they want to lecture you. And Tim Murray goes on to say, or maybe they didn't feel welcomed or accepted because they undercut the wages of Canadian workers. Or maybe it was because they sucked the tits of the welfare state that taxpayers paid for, as is their apparent entitlement. Or some other trivial reason. I don't know. But the takeaway point here is that ethnic conflict and poor race relations are done to us, not them. You see, it's our fault. And that's good guilt-mongering, multi-culti thinking. If there's a problem, it's only because we didn't try hard enough. It certainly couldn't be because multi-ethnic, multi-racial societies are inherently unstable. Anyone who would suggest such a thing is a thought criminal beyond redemption, a power light who has no place in our 21st century of mutual respect and tolerance. And I would interject there. It's not mutual. Many third worlders have nothing but contempt for us. So it's not that they respect us, but we don't respect them. But not to worry, because as Justin keeps reminding us, Canadians are a welcoming people. The angry white bigots, that's what he said. He saw demonstrating in Quebec City last August. Ari assures us a tiny minority of the population. The real Canadians are the Canadians of Antigonish in Nova Scotia, who the CBC depicted earlier this week. These real Canadians helped a Syrian Muslim family establish a very successful chocolate-making business, like the one they had back home in Syria. The 9 in 10 Syrian refugees who were stolen found a job in Canada were not featured in that news item. You know, see, it's a feel-good item. One suspects that if Canadian taxpayers saw the bill for their upkeep, they might be less welcoming than the folks in Antigonish. Oops, there I go again. This is Tim Murray. Always putting a negative face on what is a great example of how well Canadian multiculturalism works. It is truly a success story because we are so innately welcoming. The migrants can't help but to succeed. And once they do, their sons, born in Canada, will express their gratitude. A second-generation Muslim youth in the West are known to do, whether in France or Britain or Belgium, you name it. We make diversity work because we're just so damn good at it. I really like the point he's making here. And this is Tim Murray. So, therefore, it'd be reasonable to speculate that if the Martians or the Pods or the Thing had chosen Canada to be their introduction to human civilization, the movie would have followed an entirely different script from the one that Hollywood screenplay writers wrote. Upon arriving in Canada, E.T. aliens would have instantly realized that aggressive action would be unwarranted and unnecessary. The Thing would simply have had to declare refugee status and given some angry white bigots to feast on, plus a work permit, free access to medical care and social housing. In return, he, she, or it would more than likely enrich our cuisine, which according to the diversity cult is the litmus test of successful integration and good citizenship. Anthony Bourdain would be up here in a flash to put his seal of approval on Trudeau's refugee policy, as he did when he visited Germany after Merkel's bold move to open the floodgates. Since Turks and Syrians know how to prepare delectable dishes, Bourdain concluded that the massive influx was a net plus for Germany and the morally right thing to do. Didn't bother to ask any Germans, did he? And of course, if one's naive, with the utterly erroneous idea that somehow, well, the Germans didn't know how to cook until these Syrians came along. And according to Tim Murray, that's Anthony Bourdain, would no doubt reach the same verdict in Canada. The Thing may be a bloodthirsty cannibal, but he has put Quebec City on the map in terms of exotic cooking. Well, I must admit that Justin Trudeau and his public relations arm, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, make quite a team. They're doing such a bang-up job of selling out Canada that it's a wonder that every potential migrant from every failed state in the world hasn't beaten a path to our door. But perhaps I'm impatient. It just could be a matter of time before they do. Get your welcome mat ready. You know, and Tim, in that essay, makes some very very powerful points. And you know, I think among the most powerful is the observation that, you know, if Canadians are a little less, sometimes a little less than doing a jig for joy because of immigrants, of third worlders, especially ones from very, very alien cultures. Well, there's a very good reason for it. Number one, we were never asked. Number two, it's never been explained to us why we should have these people. Well, first of all, why there should be high levels of immigration at times of high levels of unemployment. I'm not saying there haven't been, you know, that there being that we've been told a crock of nonsense about a labor shortage. Well, you know, you look at the unemployment figures, and you know, you've got to be pretty daft not to see that that's a lie. Well, then they tell the story a little bit more in a more cunning way. It's a skill shortage, or well, actually, maybe not a skill shortage today, because that hardly carries any weight. We're not bringing in rocket scientists. The people who come in often are almost unemployable because they don't speak English or French, or have very low skills. Well, it's not low-skilled people that we need. I mean, assuming we need anybody. You know, it's just one lie after another. And Canadians, I don't think, have, despite endless propaganda, have really been had explained to them why we must change our population. I mean, you know, the few times you do get any sort of an answer, it's just sloganeering. You know, diversity is our greatest strength. Well, I would say diversity is not. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back at the beginning tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever.